Bill Pennington has golfed with Tiger Woods, Lee Trevino, and Annika Sorenstam. He has also wrapped a pitching wedge around a tree in frustration while practicing in his yard and toppled the wife of a country club president with a shot that wound up on a patio. Those experiences make Pennington uniquely qualified to write the On Par column for the New York Times, and his new book is called On Par, The Everyday Golfer's Survival Guide. He joins me now from NPR's New York Bureau. Bill, welcome back to Only a Game.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks for having me on.
Shortly after college, you started taking golf seriously. Shortly after that, members of a private country club invited you to join them for a round as a guest. On the third hole, you were hit in the head by a golf ball. How did that happen?
I was a real rank beginner, and these people were nice enough to invite me, sort of an older couple, and I lost my ball a little bit over in the right fairway, and I was just trying to chip out, but it hit this very slender tree, and it ricocheted right back and hit me right in the forehead. I just was stunned, and I just, like a lot of beginners, was exasperated and just kind of lofted my club, and it got caught in the low-lying limb of a pine tree. So I took another club, and I couldn't quite reach it, so I threw the other club up trying to knock the first one down, and of course I got two clubs caught up in the tree. Now I drove my cart under the tree, stood on the cart, got a third club, and started to try and knock those out while shaking the tree. And that's when my hosts pulled up in their cart and looked at me and said, "What's that red welt on your forehead?" And I said, "I hit myself with my own ball." But they just laughed, and they started telling me stories about weird things that had happened to them in the golf course. And at that moment, it's probably when I truly felt like a golfer for the first time.
Golfers love to have the latest equipment. The United States Golf Association decides which pieces of equipment are allowed under the rules of golf. You write that there have been nearly 1,300 patents for golf tee designs since 1976. Which one's the key to perfect drives?
The tees don't really make any difference, except for the fact that if you think they make a difference, then they do make a difference. People will spend $2-3 per tee because they think these are zero friction tees or various other tees, and they do have certain properties. But it's interesting, the USGA will not rule any of those as non-conforming, which means that they don't think they affect the ball, which means they don't add the distance. But there are PGA Tour golfers who use these special tees because they do believe it makes a difference. When I was at a clinic, when John Daly, the long-hitting PGA Tour player, was in his prime, and somebody in the clinic asked him for a tip on how to hit it farther, and he said, "Well, when I put the ball on the tee, I just kind of move it forward like a little quarter of an inch towards the target where I'm going." And somebody said, "Well, how many yards does that add?" He says, "Oh, it adds about a quarter of an inch."
What's the strangest piece of golf equipment you heard about when you were at the USGA Research and Test Center?
They have this enormous warehouse room with all the stuff that's been sent to them or that people are trying to get the USGA sanction. And in this room is every crazy idea that anybody's ever had. I saw two-headed putters. I saw putters with two shafts. And neither of those are conforming, obviously. You can't have a two-headed putter. But people thought maybe they could. It's a wild place. I wanted desperately to write about what was in the warehouse and take pictures of it and everything at the USGA headquarters. And they looked at me like, "Don't be ridiculous. This is secret. Nobody is allowed in here. You're not allowed to see any of this stuff." And I said, "Why? It's all stuff that is nonconforming anyway." And they said, "Yeah, but this is somebody's idea. This is their intellectual property. And you're not allowed to see it because you might then go take it and run with it and make $1 million. I'm going to make $1 million with a two-headed putter."
After the revelations about Tiger Woods' extramarital affairs, you were assigned to follow him, really follow him, when he returned to golf at the 2010 Masters. Can you tell us about that assignment?
I was on the Tiger beat. It was 2010, and he chose the Masters as the first tournament to come back at. And I didn't have to follow him off the course, thank goodness. But when he arrived at Augusta National and came into the clubhouse from the parking lot, I pretty much followed him wherever he went. He went to the practice range during his practice rounds and kept with him pretty much until he left the grounds. And I wrote about Tiger, every day through that. And it was a fascinating experience, obviously, and there was so much going on. The galleries were enormous, thousands of people watching and following him every hole, helicopters overhead filming it, planes flying overhead, dragging signs, insulting him or trying to get on him one way or another. There were people yelling from the galleries. It was a crazy atmosphere. But on Saturday, after the 13th hole, I had to go to the men's room. So I didn't see him play the 14th hole. And I just went, as he was finishing up the 14th hole, I went to the 15th tee and I knelt down by it and I waited for him to come through. And as he passed by me, he just turned and he said, "Where'd you go?" And I said, I was stunned. I sputtered, I went to the bathroom. And he said, "Okay, I was just wondering," you know, and kept on going and then went off to the tee to tee off. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, I mean, everything that was going on, he noticed that I had been following him for 6 days and I was suddenly missing for 15 minutes. I mean, that's how much he takes in. I mean, when he says he doesn't see the galleries, he doesn't see what's going on around him, he has extraordinary attention to detail and he sees everything.
When legendary golfer Annika Sorenstam told you about her dirty laundry, it was a significantly different story than Tiger's, right?
She was checking out of her hotel, obviously the last day of a tournament, and she had packed, and she thought she had packed everything, but then she found a pile of dirty laundry, and her suitcases had already been sent out of the room, so all she had left was her golf bag, which they never leave their golf bag. So she stuffed this stuff into the golf bag and said, okay, well, it'll get, you know, to my destination eventually. And then she's in the middle of the tournament that day, and she asked her caddy to get, like, a, you know, energy bar out of the golf bag, and there's this gallery of thousands watching her, and she's standing in the middle of the fairway, and caddy starts to unzip it, and she starts going, no, not that zipper, but it's too late, and he unzips it, and all this, like, dirty laundry falls all over the fairway. And, you know, Annika, this very private person, was just mortified that just all this stuff spilling out all over the fairway.
Anyone who's played understands the fear of hitting a ball over the water. Did you write about that approach shot on the 18th hole of a Colorado resort so the rest of us could say, well, it can't be worse than Pennington's when we're faced with a water hazard?
I hope so. I hope it makes everybody feel better about the weird things that do happen. I think that's part of the message of the book is that, you know, we really are all in this together. And as bad as it gets, it's been that way or worse for lots of us. And so the story you're talking about, I was on vacation in Colorado and I just wasn't sure what to hit. And, you know, that typical golfer thing, I made the wrong choice. I hit the wrong club and then I hit it poorly. And it just went sailing onto the patio, which was a slate patio, and just started, the ball just had it. Eyes of its own started flying and ricochet around all over everything. I knocked over tables, you know, waitresses dropped their tray of drinks and then somebody slipped and knocked something else over. And it was just one of those things that can only happen in golf. That wouldn't happen if you just were on vacation and went to a pickup basketball game. That just wouldn't happen.
Bill, On Par has plenty of great tips about how to deal with the shots that can turn pleasant duffers into club chucking maniacs. If you had to share one piece of advice with the average American golfer, what would it be?
Well, a guy named Dr. Joe Perrin, who calls himself the Zen master of golf, said to me one time, he said, you know, people think if they play better, they will enjoy golf more. In reality, if they enjoy it more, they will most likely play better. If we thought of it that way, I think we'd all play better and have more fun.
Bill Pennington is a sports writer for the New York Times and the author of On Par, the Everyday Golfer's Survival Guide. But more importantly, he's an 11 handicap. Bill, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Doug. It was a lot of fun.
Gonna go out and play some golf. Yeah, I'm gonna go out and play some golf. My golf bag's full of the latest stuff. I'm gonna go out and play some golf. My putter alone was $1,000. I'm gonna go out and suck it golf. Think I better take a mulligan, yeah, think I better take a mulligan. I put my ball in the pond again, I think I better take a mulligan. I tee it up and take a swing and then, can I get another mulligan? Get up.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given. Our technical director is John Parati. Welcome to our new intern, Philip Kisubika, and our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To view our photo galleries, please visit onlyagame.org. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Only a Game Radio. Our final word this week comes from On Par author Bill Pennington, who comments on the German guy who was arrested for driving a golf ball around the streets of Cologne.
Yeah, well, urban golf is always dangerous.
As opposed to playing in front of my foursome, which is only marginally less hazardous. I'm Doug Tribou. Bill Littlefield returns next week. Thanks for listening.
Never be as good as Tiger Woods. No, never be as good as Tiger Woods. My ball's always going off into the woods. Never be as good as Tiger Woods. I'm hooking my irons and I'm pulling my woods. Never be as good as Tiger Woods. Get up and get down. Hurry, slow down. Don't hit the tree. I really hate this stupid game.
Support comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children both in and out of school at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.